Hello, can you hear me? Am I on? Okay. I had a hard time hearing the last bit there, but thank you. Welcome. Thank you. I'm assuming that you were saying that I'm up next, so here I am. Hi, everybody. And welcome to episode 5. So for the last few weeks that I've been here, we've been focusing a lot on the role of frequency and vibration and the importance of knowing how it works as you move along in your chosen spiritual journey. Understanding your own energetic frequency and teaching yourself to master it, like to make moment-by-moment choices to keep your frequency uplifted, that is pretty much the most potent tool at your disposal, as far as I'm concerned, hence all the emphasis on it. But it is just a tool, of course. It's self-training that you can use as the foundation that underpins whatever other teachings or practices that resonate for you. So it's meant to be combined with whatever else that you do, meaning whatever spiritual practice that you're doing. It will always be way more powerful and way more effective if you consciously move yourself into the highest frequency that you're capable of reaching in that moment before you begin your studying or your inquiry or whatever it happens to be, because you have so much more access to wisdom and intuition and spaciousness and all the rest of it from those higher frequencies. But right now, I want to leave the discussion of frequency behind, for now anyway, and focus on something else that for me is huge, and it holds an incredibly powerful key. Because as a teacher, I've found this to be true, that there is no point in trying to bring healing help to anybody or to anywhere out there in the 3D world, to any relationship out there, unless you focus first on the only relationship that actually matters, which is the only relationship, coincidentally, that you have ever had any form of control over, and that is the relationship with yourself. Now, when we think about separation, separation obviously began with the painful segmenting of and segregation of the various parts of one's own mind, first collectively, as in the whole entire one mind, and then also individually. But now, you know, we've cut off the collective from our own awareness, so we're each of us wandering around with an individuated sense of a split-off self. We're split off from various parts of our own personal awareness. So the only part that we walk around mostly aware of is the conscious mind, you know, the 15% at the top of the iceberg. But what is actually running our day-to-day experience is that more unconscious part of the self, you know, the very fear-based self that is classically referred to as the ego. And then there's the aspect of the self that so many of us here, anyway, are trying to scramble to climb up to experience firsthand, and that would be what I would call the higher self, or you can call it the holy self if you like. And you know, those of us who are doing that, we really want that taste of heaven, or we think we do. But in many cases, what we're really looking for is not divinity at all, per se. We're actually just hoping for some relief from the painful antics of the ego. And we talked a little bit about this a few weeks ago, about, you know, why it is that you actually want enlightenment. Because there's kind of a problem with reaching upward all the time toward that little taste of heaven. Because we are actually very daunted, almost all of us, and we're very afraid of the hugeness and the overwhelm of the knowledge and information that are contained in that holy self. It's the fear of knowing ourselves as we are in truth, and we do not feel ready or worthy of that And that is pretty much the human condition. We want to know heaven, but we couldn't accept it if we had it. And that's true of every one of us to one degree or another. We're all hiding hard from our own greatness. So we hold our fear of our own divinity away, out of sight and out of mind, and we hand over all those fears to the unconscious part of the self, to the ego, the shadow self, and we ask it to file them away someplace too deep for us to find. And we do everything we can to make sure that those separate aspects of the mind, the higher mind, the conscious thinking mind, and then the more unconscious aspects of the ego mind, we do everything in our power to make sure that they never come together. Because if all those aspects of the mind are allowed to come together as one and be healed in wholeness, well, you know, you will definitely remember your own divinity. So we can't ever let that happen. We've placed lots and lots of hardcore defenses in the way of that ever happening. And ironically, if we're somebody with a devoted spiritual practice, we will use that practice as a way of staying very busy, as a way of never allowing all the parts of the mind to come together, all the while believing we're doing exactly the opposite, because the ego mind is incredibly clever at doing the job that we asked it to do, because we really, really do not want to experience our own divinity, in other words. So we task the ego mind with using all of its fiendishly clever delaying tactics to make sure that it never happens. And, you know, take my word for it, it doesn't happen. Meaning, it doesn't happen by accident. It doesn't happen as a natural consequence of spiritual practice. You only begin to crack the deep core of resistance to embodying your own true divine nature by very consciously deciding to do just that. And you will probably freak your ego out a bit when you first make that decision. Well, actually, there's no probably about it. You will freak your ego out. Even if you're on fairly good terms with your own inner self, and most of us are not, at least not initially, but even if you are on pretty good terms with the small self, or the ego mind, if you want to call it that, it will humor you for a while, but you'll know when you've hit pay dirt, because it will go, okay, this isn't funny anymore, and it will freak out, and it will draw up the drawbridges and release the hounds or whatever it's going to do. It will do whatever it feels like it needs to do to protect you and itself from the terrible secret that it carries, the terrible secret of your divinity. But before you ever even get to that terrible secret, you'll uncover other, much smaller terrible secrets, but then it won't seem small, having to do with your own personal life, meaning like in this incarnation. Because the small self carries around wounds that you acquired in this lifetime. And it cherishes those, and it blows them up big on the movie screen, and it sits down with a big bag of popcorn to watch and rewatch those old films over and over. And when you walk around in your life, it goes with you, and it brings its old movies with it. And it uses everything in your world as a screen, and it projects those old movies onto everything and everybody you encounter. So you get to experience your life through a projected haze of old movie footage. So that's a great way of keeping you distracted from ever getting near the terrible secret of your own divinity. Because all these old movies are the outpictured side effects of the unhealed secrets that it carries pertaining to your own life. And these wounds from this lifetime, they pretty much need to be addressed before the way can be cleared enough to even contemplate getting to the core issue of your own divinity. The wounds from this lifetime are set up as deliberate roadblocks, guess what, set up by you. So there's no skipping around them to get to the embodied recognition of your own divinity. This, your own personal movie footage, this is the healing the healing of the misperceptions of pain and attack from this lifetime that has to take place first by whatever methods that you choose. Not necessarily by examining each and every one of the stories that caused them. In fact, that's probably not a great idea. But you will ultimately have to feel and acknowledge them before they're free to melt away and be released. Another way to look at this is that these are the ropes and the anchors, remember that I spoke about in previous weeks, that prevent you from moving into higher frequency. Anyway, it's the bringing together of the small self with the other aspects of the mind, bringing together of the higher and the lower, that is actually where tremendous healing occurs. And really, this is the only kind of healing that truly matters, to holistically bring all the aspects of the mind together so that they function as one. And that wholeness then can be extended to relationships outside of yourself. And, you know, it's a process like anything else. You begin with your own personal blocks, your own movie footage, and then when your vision has become clearer, like when the movies don't run as often, maybe, and you no longer sit down to watch them with any great fascination, then you're free to keep going into purer and purer integration of all aspects of the split-off mind. Because in total joining of all aspects of the mind, of the so-called higher and lower aspects of the mind, there is way more healing here than meets the eye. When all aspects of this one's mind, my mind, are holistically joined, I can know myself as one, not only as one with myself as an individuated human being, but one with all that is, because that is one of the qualities of my higher mind, which would then be known and embodied throughout this self. When my mind is joined, unconditional love would be something that I experience myself as on an ongoing basis, not just fleetingly. So, you know, I experience myself as unconditional love, so there is no doing. There is no trying to give love to any interpersonal relationship or any other kind of relationship that I focus on out there in the world. If I feel that healing needs to happen someplace and I want to offer that healing, you know, that's very nice. But if I am devoid of integrated self-love and communion on the inside, if these aspects of the self have not been brought together, then I don't have anything within that I can send out that can allow for true healing to take place. Whatever is occurring outside that appears to need healing, it's actually only asking for the information of wholeness and oneness that is hopefully exuding from me. And that information is purely energetic in nature. The wholeness that is exuding from me is an energetic reminder to all beings, sentient, insentient, whatever, of its own wholeness and its own integration. And then healing naturally flows from the reminder of its own wholeness and its own integration. But if I don't have that going on in myself, there is no way that I can extend that outward, because that information is entirely energetic. It's received as a frequency by other beings, not through me talking or teaching or through taking actions in the world. Not to say that all those activities don't have their value. They do, of course they do. But it's secondary to the energetic component. And if that energetic component is missing, if I don't have that going on, then the value of those activities that I'm dashing around doing is quite limited by comparison. Because ultimately, it's always a being, an embodiment of that frequency, and it's not really a doing. So, okay, I decide, yes, I'm ready to start the process of turning toward the self to begin the integration process of higher and lower into one integrated self. So, where does one start? Well, it can begin by agreeing to get to know myself without all of the crap that I have piled on top, meaning without the movie images that I have projected onto me, without all the preconceived ideas about which parts of me are good and which parts of me are bad, and oh, that ego, that terrible ego that's always doing its dastardly best to keep me from experiencing heaven. Enough with the demonizing of the ego. And incidentally, we're stepping outside of the ultimate truth concept of the ego, meaning the Course in Miracles definition of the ego here, in order to be able to talk about this, because you wouldn't be able to. Because yes, in ultimate truth, everything that we are, everything that we experience or perceive or project or think here in 3D, it's all the ego. For that matter, frequency and vibration are also of the world of illusion of the ego. But that's kind of a purely intellectual knowing at this point, and it'll tie you up in knots if you let it. So please bear with me. I'm going with a smaller, narrower definition for these purposes. So when I talk about the ego in this context, I mean the unconscious storehouse for your pain and fear. So the ego is not to be demonized because it is an aspect of the self, just the same as the conscious thinking mind, the personality self, is an aspect of the self. And, you know, not coincidentally, the ego has been tasked by you with trying to keep you safe. It's keeping itself safe and you too. And that's because it has more info than you do about the whole picture. So it already recognizes that you and it are one and the same, and it just wants to keep you safe because it wants to be safe itself. And it's not very good at keeping you safe in a way that you would approve of, but then your happiness is not its priority, is it? That's not its job. And yes, it's usually working in some way that is counterproductive and a little bit crazy, or probably a lot crazy. But to demonize it or to continue to hold it away like this is a delaying tactic that just keeps separation in place. And it keeps personal pain cycling around over and over for as long as you want it to, until you get bored with it, basically, until you get well and truly fed up. Because, you know, here's the big news of the day. If, you know, maybe you've always thought of your disparate aspects of the mind as being in tidy little separate wrapped up packages, like up there in the sky someplace is the holy self. And here inside my head is the conscious thinking mind self. And then down there somewhere is the ego self, you know, the shadow self. Or even if you don't think of them in quite that way as having separate locations. But still, if you have ideas or assumptions about which of those aspects of the mind is better or holier than the others, at some point in your journey, it is going to occur to you that it's all the holy self. It's all the same thing, every bit of it equally. And I'm not talking like you will recognize this in some intellectual, non-specific, ultimate truthy kind of way, because none of us has any firsthand access to ultimate truth while we're here in the dream. So that is not what I mean when I say that you will come to a recognition that all aspects of the self are the holy self. I mean, you will eventually get so bored with the fruitless way that you've been doing it forever, this judgment of what's good and what's bad and what's up and what's down and what's contracted and what's expanded and what's holy and what's profane. And you'll stop running away from those parts of the self that you don't like. And you'll turn around to face that ego self, that small self, the shadow. And when we do that, and we're also bringing, you know, what we think of as the holy self or the highest self with us, of course. And we're doing that and we ask for clarity of vision. And you decide that you truly want to see this lower aspect of the self in a new way, with fresh eyes, with the movie projector pointed someplace else for a minute, in other words. And you drop the attack. Because you have been holding your arms up in that fisticuffs position since the beginning of time. So you drop your fists and you get curious about what this aspect of the self actually is. And this is the point, if you haven't already done so before this, where you might want to pause and choose to raise your own energetic frequency as high as you can possibly get it right now. And you would do that, for example, by choosing whatever thoughts of gratitude that feel authentically juicy to you in this moment. We talked last week about how incredibly supported you are in your world and in your universe. So you can use these kinds of thoughts or, you know, any other ones that feel pertinent to cause your frequency to soar as high as it can go. And you'll definitely know it when you feel it, because it feels expansive and great. And in that state of high frequency, you have far greater access to guidance and inspiration. You have greater access to clarity and wisdom and to creative solutions to old problems. You easily see things as they are without the movie projections playing on top of them. So in this state of higher frequency, you say to the higher wisdom self, show me what it is I'm actually looking at. What am I seeing here when I turn to look at this ego self? What does it look like without the movie images clouding my view of it? And when you're not busy attacking it, when you're actually giving it the attention that it craves from you, the attention that you've probably been denying it forever, you will pretty quickly see that this thing that you've been assuming was just a horrible, hateful, unspiritual beast really was just acting out to get your attention, because it's a part of you. It's a part of yourself. And you're kind of like a parent to it. So it has been wanting and needing for you to notice it, like, forever. And it's probably a little bit pissed off because you've been doing your best to ignore it for all this time. But underneath that, underneath the way it acts out, there's an aspect of the self that yearns to be seen. And not only seen, but to be accepted exactly as it is. Its function, which, yeah, was the function that you yourself gave it, is to be the repository of your fears and to be the one that is tasked with keeping you from having to remember your own divinity, the hugeness, you know, and the responsibility of your greatness. So this aspect of the self demands to be seen and accepted and loved with all of its misperceptions and bad behaviors intact. It needs to know that it's worthy of love in your eyes, and therefore in God's eyes, exactly as it is, without having to change a single thing about itself. And not coincidentally, you crave exactly the same thing, by the way, because everybody does. It's what we do. But of course, that's a tall order when you feel as abused by it as it has always felt abused by you. Finding it worthy exactly as it is and agreeing to be with it without trying to change anything about it, that, you know, it's not easy when this thing has dragged you through the mud the way it has. And you no doubt would very much like to make it stop doing certain things. But this thing cannot be manipulated or fooled. It can't be persuaded or cajoled into doing anything it feels is not in its best interest or yours. And it certainly does not want you touching into your own unlimitedness, your own power, in any meaningful way. And yes, it does have the power itself to keep you from all of these things. Because this little self knows way more about who you are than you do. It knows more about your true identity in God, and it always has. And yet, it doesn't really have a logical mind. It doesn't have half of the tools that you have to deal with that burden. And you, the grown-up, have been AWOL since the very beginning of its creation. So you might have to be a little bit patient when you first ask to see it without its movie projection images. And when you stop defining it as evil and you just want to make a connection and find out who this aspect of the self actually is, but it might not be nearly as interested in getting to know you as you are in getting to know it. It might only want to yell at you at first when you finally turn around and say, "Hey there, tell me about yourself. Tell me what it's like to be you." It might want to yell, or it might stay just completely silent, just totally unconvinced of your sincerity, with metaphorical arms crossed, scowling, and one eyebrow raised. So you might want to understand that this might very possibly be its first response. And so you start by deeply and sincerely apologizing for having abandoned it for all this time. This does not mean that you're guilty because you did the best you could with the information that you had. This is a part of the self that deep down only wants your attention and your love, and it's actually craving your acceptance. But that is not how it has appeared to any of us. We see the ego as some kind of terrible, monstrous thing, and we're fighting against that thing's incredibly unloving, destructive power. And that's the way, classically, that we've always perceived it. But when you do turn around in high, clear vibration and ask sincerely of your higher self, "Hey, let's take away all my faulty, painful, preconceived ideas about what's good and bad and right and wrong and what I should fight and what I should surrender to, and you show me what I'm actually looking at here. I want to see more clearly than I ever have seen before." And it becomes clear pretty quickly how the ego has been maligned and misjudged. And if you keep fighting the ego, well, you'll never ever win by fighting the ego, because this is what it does so incredibly well. It is way better at it than you are. So once you dismantle your armor against what you've traditionally thought of as an enemy, and you'd be wise to continue to have deep respect for the hugeness of this aspect of yourself, of your mind, and never underestimate it, because it absolutely is as big as your universe, and it will not give in and allow you to merge with your higher self one moment sooner than it wants to. It will only do that when it is ready, when it feels safe enough, when it feels like there's enough of a reason to trust you in order to merge and join together with you and with your higher self. And it doesn't trust you, and that's for a very good reason, by the way. You have never approached it on its own terms. You have always come with an agenda, if you've come at all. You've never shown up at its front door with empty hands. And honestly, that is the greatest hostess gift you could ever bring with you when you go within, to go visit the ego on its own turf with empty hands, empty of preconceived ideas about it, empty of desire to do battle with it, or kill it, or heal it, or transcend it, or trick it into leaving you alone, all of which are perceived equally as attack and non-acceptance. So you knock on its door, and you wave the white flag, and you say, "I've been resisting you forever. I've tried everything I know of to get rid of you, and you haven't gone. I recognize now that there is no sneaking around you, and I know I'll never win by resisting or opposing you. And now I realize that I don't even want to oppose you. I actually want to know you and love you because you are an intrinsic part of myself. And if I refuse to love you, I'm actually refusing to love myself because it's the same thing. But I never saw it that way before this. I never understood. I always blamed you and hated you. And I realize that you don't trust me, you don't believe me, and you know what? I do not blame you one bit. So I'm approaching you on your terms, not mine. I will stop resisting you. I'm coming to you because clearly you are not coming to me. So somebody has to make the first move. So here I am. And I give up. I accept what you think you are, and I accept how you make me feel about my life, which is crap. And I love you anyway. And I place no conditions on my love for you. I'll sit here in the sink with you because, well, this is where I find you. So we'll sit here together and breathe it in, and I will love you exactly as you are, stink and all. Because you've shown me very clearly that you won't let me love you any other way. You won't let me love you on my terms. You won't let me sanitize you first, or heal you, or spritz you with the perfume of divinity. So here I am, loving you on your terms, exactly as you are right now. And when you do that sincerely, the small self sits up and takes notice. And because you've done this, and because you continue to genuinely love the small self consistently without secretly having some other kind of agenda, then there will come a time when that small self will voluntarily come forward into the light to join with you. And this is a form of suicide, by the way, because it only knows itself through these shadow behaviors that it has. It only knows itself through being fearful and through its abilities and its desires to protect your separate survival on your behalf. So when you take those things away from it, most of the things it knows itself as will go away. And it is already well aware of that. You cannot bullshit your ego. It knows that most of what it is will disappear. Not everything, because some of its functions are vital to your experience of living in a body in 3D, and they always will be. And in their healthy, healed expression, excuse me, those functions of the ego, they'll be magnificent in their expression. But most of what currently runs it, and what therefore runs you, meaning the conscious you, will no longer be relevant to your existence on Earth. Because if you're walking around as peace, if you're walking around knowing yourself as safety and as the cherished creation of your creator, then the ego is not only out of a job, it has given away pretty much its whole current identity. And so in the joining, the reunion of the split off portions of the mind, then that aspect of the self, of the ego self, will more or less cease to function, at least in the ways that it is accustomed to functioning. So from its perspective, it has to be enough convinced that there is something there, and then it will make what it considers the ultimate sacrifice. But it has to know that it is loved and cared for by you, even while it's being a pain in the ass, especially while it's being that way. It needs to know that, and really it deserves to know that. You will have to reach that point where you genuinely wouldn't change a thing about the ego, even if you could. And trust me, you can't. It only changes by its own decision, never yours. You cannot force it to change or do an end run around it as often as you might try. And you certainly cannot make it go away by focusing only upwards on the higher divine aspects of the self. Ask me how I know these things. But as it begins to trust that you genuinely, truly love it, it will act accordingly with love for you. Yeah, that aspect of the self actually is capable of love. And it will begin to behave in loving ways towards you. But it all starts with when you stop attacking the crap that it pulls and you begin to sense into what is the ego that lives in me? Who is this really? And you begin to have a knowing, a recognition that this is truly an intrinsic part of me, a hitherto unknown part of me that I yearn so deeply to connect with again. And it may come as a surprise, certainly did for me, to discover how much you've missed this aspect of the self. I was extremely surprised to discover that I have missed this part of the self so badly that I can't even verbalize the ache of it. It's a yearning that goes back for centuries, for millennia. It's that deep. This intense yearning to reunite what's been split off. And I recognize that because of the fraught relationship between us, you know, I've been running away from you, I've been fighting you forever, and you in turn have been doing your utmost to make me pay for it. And you've been all the while honestly trying to protect me in ways that caused us both such grief and pain, because it's what you thought I wanted. But I've blamed you unfairly and tried my best to get away from you in any way that I could. But aside from all of that, aside from our troubled history together, I miss you so much, and I so dearly want to join with you and know you as myself once again. And I want to be able to hold you and love you and allow you to know yourself as fully accepted, fully cherished, and completely loved by me, and never again abandoned by me. And to prove it, here I am. I'm coming to your neck of the woods, and I'll look at the world through your painful lens, because I want to see as you see. I want to understand fully what you've been going through all by yourself all this time. And I swear I am not going to judge you or hold you at arm's length. I'm just going to sit with you and love you, because frankly, nothing else has worked. So that's what I'm going to do. And when that part of the self knows itself as loved and knows itself as being never abandoned, guess what? You get to walk through life knowing yourself as loved and never abandoned. It is uncanny. It's like it's an instant replay on the outside of what begins to be true on the inside. And as that little self, which has always felt so maligned and so misunderstood and so betrayed, having to take on the big jobs that you, the grown-up, should have been stepping up and taking all along, as it falls into line to be, you know, somewhat on the same side that you are, it begins to shed that confusing appearance of being a big, ugly enemy that it has appeared to be all along. And you start to see it without, like, the horror movie footage running over top of it. And it turns out that it really isn't big or ugly or monstrous. That was just part of its self-protection, like protective coloration. It's actually quite small and quite undeveloped in many ways. people often talk about the inner child, and honestly, that's not a term that I particularly like personally, but I get why they use it, because there is something very childlike and something very young and ill-equipped about this aspect of the self. So you start to see through the protective coloration, and there starts to be funny little hints and whisperings that this lower self, this ego or child self, and the higher self, the holy self, are actually the same self. And when that starts to happen, that is the start of a very exciting adventure in healing. And, you know, naturally, it's an ongoing thing. It continues to deepen as you move through layer after layer of trust and surrender to each other. The surrender is not a one-way street, at least not at first. But that rediscovery and integration is a very exciting process because you have control over this. At least I think it's exciting because of the control. Because it's your decision. You are the one that can turn around and begin anytime you want to build the bridge and forge that relationship with the lower self. Because it really is worth getting to know. What we call the ego self is actually a vast, mysterious universe in itself. And it must be reckoned with, meaning it must be accepted and embraced and surrendered into by you, by whatever means, before the key will turn in the lock so that the door to the eternal knowing of the self swings wide open. And, of course, in truth, there is no locked door. But in practical human experience, we usually experience it as if there is. And it's the ego self, or more specifically, one's own resistance to the ego self, that forms the experience of being stopped by a locked door. The ego self itself is the portal that has to open before you can turn around and really receive everything that the higher self is dying to share with you. That's what's keeping you from being able to dwell in the knowing of the higher self as you. It's the mutual surrender of the opinionated conscious thinking mind, surrendering into love and acceptance of the shadow self exactly as it is, and then the surrender of the shadow, which gradually learns to trust the conscious mind enough to join with it. And in that mutual surrender, a kind of an alchemy takes place. The choice to love each other unconditionally without asking either one to change first, the healing that occurs there is profound. To accept the inner self right now, this means to drop the dearly held project of cleaning and healing oneself with an eye towards future enlightenment and future perfection. It'll feel strange to accept everything you hate about yourself or are disappointed with about yourself, physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually. But non-judgmental acceptance, if not outright unconditional love, for yourself exactly as you are right now in this moment, lines you up to a very high degree with the way that creation sees you. Paradoxically, the end of self-rejection, self-judgment, self-hatred frees up more light to enter, and it causes more of the shadow stuff to melt away quicker. But that self-acceptance has to be real. It has to genuinely be for its own sake, not because you have a secret agenda to use this to wake up. You are doing this simply because it's insane not to. You are inescapably you. You will always be you. You must decide to accept yourself, all the parts of yourself. Resisting yourself only creates constant pain for you and for the world. because the world, your other selves, they need your light. By denying yourself, you deny others the benefit of your light. So, for the sake of your peace, you try this. I accept everything about me as I am right now. Even the sticky stuff that causes me pain. Even the things I've done that I'm ashamed of. Even that weird bump on my nose or whatever it is. Similarly, it's insane to resist and hide from the present moment. Life is only made up of present moments, as I'm sure you well know. This is not the first time you've heard someone say it. Past and future are just funny filing systems that we create in our minds to stash ideas into. The present is all you got. So it's ridiculously simple, really. Accept yourself and be here where you are. That'll be $25,000, please, you know. It's a spiritual journey in a single sentence. If you can manage that, to accept yourself and be here where you are, even in short bursts of meditation or exercise, then huge power and resources of clarity and light are made available to help lift you ever higher in your vibrational frequency. And from that higher vantage point, real non-judgment and love and trust and acceptance of others can start to flow. And from there, you can ask for more help from your higher self to always expand and deepen your own awareness and your own love and acceptance of self and others, always looking to hold and radiate more light on behalf of all. Because you are never done. There is no finish line. You can keep on awakening and deepening infinitely. So this alone can be a life's practice. In every moment, whatever occurs, you notice it. You notice your own imperfect reactions or responses to it, both emotionally and in the body. And you choose to love and accept this display of your own work-in-progress self. Because if you tend to get angry or feel victimized or fearful or whatever your familiar reaction to life's events might be, it doesn't help to judge your own response. Trust me. You are just piling criticism on top of pain and perpetuating the battle with yourself and guaranteeing that the pattern won't heal. Judging yourself does not make you humble. And it certainly doesn't ensure that the unwanted behavior stays locked behind closed doors, because that ain't how it works. It's the opposite. To love and accept the aspect of the self that is acting out, even while it's doing it, slowly builds a bridge, a sense of trust, and that is a communication link with the small self. So you can make a practice of this. It's not going to happen all at once. When the small self is acting up, no matter how awkward or inconvenient or painful or whatever it is, the thing is that's occurring, it's an excellent opportunity to be able to reaffirm, there is nothing you could say, there is nothing you could ever do that would cause me to love you any less. I take this as an opportunity to affirm completely and with all my heart how eternal my love for you is and my commitment to you is, and that each day that commitment is just going to get stronger. So you can throw at me whatever you're going to throw at me, since I don't seem to be able to stop you from doing that. So you can do what you will do, but you need to know that no matter what you do, your love is safe with me. And you will probably find that there are less and less tantrums and fewer and fewer inconvenient occurrences cropping up as you turn to unconditionally love your shadow self, because it no longer has to resort to extraordinary means to get your attention. But you can't wait for a smoother relationship with it to happen first before you decide to love it. that unconditional love has to come from you first, or at least the first steps have to be taken by you. And then you gradually teach each other what unconditional love actually means, because neither one of you is any good at it yet, trust me. And this is an extremely worthwhile thing to do, this mutual learning between self and self of how to unconditionally love one another. Because you know what? There's no love out in the 3D world that can promise the same thing. There is no 100% reliable support or safety in the world, because that's not the way we set it up, and it's not what the world is for. The world is here to teach us, ultimately, that everything we crave can only be found within. We crave to be truly seen, and yet it's not possible to be truly seen by another person. Not really. That person is seeing their lens, which plays their old movies, and you are seeing your lens, which runs your old movies, and your lens and their lens are not ever showing the same movies. So if you want to be seen, and you do, then the one who is doing the seeing has to be you. If you want to be loved no matter what, the one who's doing that loving has to be you. And you have it within your ability to do all of that by making the decision that all aspects of the self will be loved and accepted always, no matter how they might be behaving in this particular minute. You affirm, I will never withdraw my love from you. I will never again abandon you, no matter what. And that creates such a powerful ripple of healing throughout your own being. And that's what we're talking about here. That's where the real juice is for you and for your entire world. Because it's those ripples of recognition, as in, I accept everything about myself. I welcome everything about myself home into oneness. This is what the world is waiting for. And it won't happen just because you're talking about it or reading it or studying it or intellectually believing in it. It has to come from what you are actually actively experiencing in yourself vibrationally. The knowing of yourself as loved and accepted by all parts of the self, especially the conscious self and the shadow self, because really, the holy self is automatically on board with this process the moment you can allow it. And it takes no effort on your part. But anyway, this inner knowing of mutual love and acceptance creates a powerful energetic ripple that is felt by all. And yes, it's definitely a work in progress. Very few people, I'm sure, have just decided to do this and then immediately did a complete 100% forgiveness on themselves or on the world around them. But the beginning of the process is a great place to start. And it might not feel like much is happening for a few months. There could be quite a lack of anything that resembles progress at first. Because, you know, like I said, you might get yelled at a little bit by this child energy that has been ignored for so long. But if you take the attitude that you're being the responsible grown-up here, then you will sit still for it. And you'll search yourself within and you'll say, how would I feel? How would the conscious mind itself feel if someone behaved towards me the way I have behaved towards that aspect of myself? And you will authentically want to apologize to it. Like I said, not to beat yourself up, not to make yourself guilty, because you're not guilty. But it's always a good idea to admit to the mistakes that have been made so far. And that you would genuinely like to rectify that now and genuinely develop an interest in what is this dark miracle that is currently masquerading as this ego self, this monstrous separate aspect of the self. And that is a fairly urgent thing because, you know, we can all look around in the world and see what happens to egos that remain unloved within. You can look at the havoc that it creates out there. So it is quite an urgent thing, I think, for your happiness and for the sake of the world, because everything starts within. Because, like we discussed, it's impossible to see clearly through a lens that's mired in battle. It's battle with the self as it currently is, with all its unperfected shadow bits, and in battle with the present moment. Everything seen through these eyes is stained by war. It's impossible to see reality until the eyesight is cleared, until the old movie footage is no longer playing over top of the present moment experience of life. So here's a little exercise for loving the small self, just for fun and the sake of experimentation. You might want to try spending a whole day devoted to being kind to the small self. You become interested in it, and you make the first move, like, I want to get to know you so I can learn how to love you, and so that you can learn to trust me. And even if it ignores you, or if it flattens its ears and hisses at you, if it's still in monster mode, you still practice being unfailingly kind to it, meaning no judgment and no impatience or resistance. I have a friend who thinks of the ego self as being like an abused animal, and that is probably a really good analogy, maybe even better than the child analogy, actually. So head on over to the animal shelter within and spend a day extending patience and kindness to your own abused animal ego self and see what comes of it. So that's it. That's what I got. And incidentally, I will mention here that I'm doing a 3-day hands-on workshop on this very topic of opening that bridge with the small self. It's going to be here in New Hampshire at the end of October. And the information is on my website if it interests you. That's carrietriffitt.com. And so that is it. Thank you very much, everybody. And peace out. Bye. Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Bye, everybody.
Thank you, Carrie. And what an important message. Be kind and compassionate to our little selves. Yes, we need to give ourselves unconditional love. So again, Carrie's website is Carrie Triffitt, TRIFFET.com. And if you were inspired by this mini-series with Carrie, please support the guest teacher with a donation. Donations are tax deductible for U.S. citizens under the IRS code 501c3. So you can go to our website, awakening-together.org. Go to the donate and support the current mini series. So thank you so much. And we are now getting ready for our contemplation with tonight's quote with Regina Dawn Akers. So welcome back, Regina. And are you all set? She's got her quote up and she's ready. So good night. Thank you all for being here, and please come back again. Oops.
Good night, Lynn. Have a good week. And hello, everyone. Welcome to our nightly contemplation. We call it the daily contemplation, but it's really a nightly contemplation. Of course, we've been contemplating it all day, some of us look at it early in the morning. But this is the quote. It is when we begin to witness interdependence that we see the true importance of personal responsibility. Once we see that nothing happens in a vacuum, that's the exact moment when we are properly inspired to become accountable for our own mind. Ethan Nickturn. And I don't know him, so I don't know for sure if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly or not. Ethan Nickturn. Lynn says, perfect quote for tonight. Yeah. So what I'm going to do is just play a song and why I play this song, everyone will have the opportunity to contemplate the quote, and then afterwards we will see what people want to share. So the song I'm playing is called My Silent Knowing, and it's from the Liquid Mind Meditation album.